Hallo und herzlich willkommen hier beim Honigweib Podcast. Ich freue mich so sehr, dass du wieder mit dabei bist oder zum ersten Mal da bist bei deinem Raum für emotionale Freiheit, gelebte Magie und tiefe Seelenverbindung und ein lustvoll gelebtes Leben. Dieser Podcast ist für dich, wenn du dich erinnern möchtest, wer du wirklich bist und den Mut hast, deinen ureigenen Weg zu gehen. Ich bin Susanne, dein Host hier, traumasensitive und mediale Mentorin für Heilung, Weiblichkeit, Berufung, Leben und Intimität. Und ich habe heute eine ganz, ganz besondere Gästin für dich, für euch, nämlich Rachel Ricards, die ich im Mai bei einem Retreat in Holland kennengelernt habe, was mich total berührt, erweitert hat und ja, was mich für mich unfassbar wertvoll war für meinen eigenen Weg, für meine Arbeit. Und ich freue mich so sehr, dass ich Rachel heute für euch da habe und du da auch eintauchen kannst in diese Energie. Wir sprechen über Berufung, über tiefe Hingabe, über berührbares Marketing, Mutterschaft, Intimität und so eine ganz integre Form, tiefe Form von Leadership, was ja eines meiner absoluten Lieblingsthemen ist. Das Interview ist auf Englisch, es ist ein gut verständliches Englisch, meins ist nicht perfekt, ich habe mein Bestes gegeben. Und ich freue mich total, wenn du mit uns eintauchst. Ja, und jetzt kommt die Begrüßung noch auf Englisch. Welcome to the Honigweib Podcast, your space for emotional freedom, embodied magic and deep soul connection. For you, when you are ready to remember who you truly are and walk on your own wild sacred path. I'm Susan, your host, mentor for healing, feminine embodiment, and soul-led purpose. I'm so glad you're here. And today I have a very special guest for you, Rachel Ricards. Very inspirational and a woman who just touched me so deeply. We talk about purpose, devotion, vulnerable marketing, motherhood, intimacy, and what it means to lead from presence, especially as a sensitive woman. So, and now welcome to the podcast. We are just starting in a second. So glad you are here. I'm really excited to welcome such a beautiful, gifted, wonderful woman today in my podcast. And I'm welcoming Rachel Ricards, an international leader in embodiment, trauma-informed facilitation, group transformation, intimacy, the founder of the field training of the intimacy camp, a mother, a speaker, a gifted writer, a podcast host, and a woman who really inspires me with her integrity, with her bravery. Yeah, and just with your presence, I experienced you in the retreat, the Merchant Field in May, together with Christian, and it was one of the most transformative and most beautiful retreats I've ever have been in. I have been to a lot. So it's so good to have you here. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
Do you want to add something on your introduction?
No, this is enough. I always feel a little awkward in the introductions, like, so this was fine, and we will see what more introductions come as we talk and the conversation unravels.
Yeah, right. And what we want to talk about today is the gift of space holding and leadership as a woman, and also intimacy. And I mean, it's all connected together. It's all about relating. And how did this whole issue of space holding become so important for you?
Yeah. That's an interesting question. You know, I I mean, in many ways, it starts in my family of origin already. You know, I think we are all trained in some way for what we become. So I was definitely, I was in a big, complex family, multiple families. My parents got divorced and then they remarried and then they had new partners and there was new kids. And so it was like, I grew up with a lot of complexity, a lot of moving relational dynamics, a lot of family stuff happening. And I think this already started to set me in a certain direction of curiosity. And then I was also really into hospitality and gathering people and kind of taking care of people. So I went to college for a degree in event production. So I already was doing, knew I wanted to host events from a young age. Maybe I was 17 or even 16 when I knew this is what I wanted to do. But it kept, you know, it kept shifting and changing. I went to Hollywood and Los Angeles and did celebrity events. And then I took myself on a little journey. Then I started organizing more conscious events and community events. And then I started studying with different teachers. And at some point I was pretty resistant to being a facilitator. Which is a little bit of why I trust it. It wasn't ever something I wanted to do. I was really like, no, I'm the behind the scenes person. I'm the one in the back that no one sees. And then I was so touched by life and the teachers who I had received from that there came this moment, where it was like, I just remember this, like, if you don't, this knowing inside of me that if I didn't continue to pass on the teachings I was given, that I would be actually doing a disservice to the world. It was a little bit of a push because I had to, what it was sharing with me was like, hey, you have to actually confront whatever it is that you need to confront to get over yourself, to actually step up into this leadership and do something here. And I had a lot of resistance to that. I did not want to be on stage. I still don't like being the center of attention. I never throw birthday parties for myself. You know, like that's all really challenging for me. But being in service is where my passion and purpose come alive, and where I'm like, okay, I can get over myself to be living my purpose and to be doing something that's important. And so that's a little bit of how it came to be. And then I just, you know, kept throwing myself, which is kind of a funny phrase, but an accurate phrase. Like I had to just keep, meeting what I had to meet in myself to create and hold the spaces that I feel and have felt are needed and necessary and important in the world.
Wow. Yeah, this is really touching me because there's, especially in this time, so much pressure with, I have to find my purpose. I have to live my purpose. And I mean, you are really successful by just following what is needed. And how are you dealing with these resistances? I mean, you are holding immense big spaces. Often there, I don't know, there are 40 people in it, or even, I mean, the Intimacy Summer Camp. It's so huge. Why are you not overwhelmed by all these people?
I mean, sometimes I am. I wouldn't say I'm not ever not overwhelmed. For sure, I'm overwhelmed. You know, something I've been processing a little bit lately is that I'm actually like really an introvert. And I think people don't expect that maybe or understand that. I was with a friend and he was like, We hadn't spent time in person together in a few years. And he was like, wow, I just forgot what an introvert you are until we were together again. And I'm like, yeah, I really am at heart. But I think that introversion and that inward that comfort in being more inward is a part of other versions of my creativity, and also a part of my is also a part of how I sense and feel myself, and how I'm able to translate or work with that in group spaces. But often in group spaces, like, you won't see me out socially a lot. You know, I'm really out in the event space, and then in the time off, I'm really with myself, because that's what I need to not be overwhelmed. And I think just after doing this for over a decade, you have to keep finding out, like, what's going to work for you to do this, because it's totally not sustainable. Burnout is one of the biggest viruses, we could call it, that gets group facilitators, because we all want to serve and we all want to, you know, show up and meet the needs of the groups. And for a long time, especially at the beginning, people will do that beyond their own capacity and boundaries. So it's like, I kind of have found this place in me with really being really devoted and connected to my nervous system, where I have to be in relationship to my body and my needs, and not letting myself get totally overwhelmed all the time. And then I take breaks, you know, like, it's been a month since we were together in the Netherlands, and I haven't held space, you know, and I actually get more overwhelmed by these periods of time where I have to be, like, in my home office doing online work. I'm like, oh, I feel so much better when I'm in groups. Like, that's my natural state. If I could be there navigating, you know, both being in the group and then finding my own space, and I just lived that all the time, I would love this. But it's a work in progress.
Yeah, great that you, like, that you know yourself so well, that you know what you need.
Yeah.
And I also, I experienced this when, as a group holder, that you were so much into the group, and then you were with yourself. And for me, it's also very inspiring, because I also feel like it's also burning me out, this all in between.
Yeah.
Right, this whole mix. So I love this clarity, and I think it's one of the secrets why the spaces are so clear.
Yeah, exactly. To not get muddied in, and, you know, me, I can have personal conversations with people, but when I'm holding space, it really doesn't support the space, especially for the kind of collective group space that I want to hold. The more personally intertwined I start getting sometimes, the more, I don't know, just foggy things get. And that doesn't mean I don't want to know people personally or be a person. Of course, like, I love this. And it's just about timing. You know, it's like, in the group space, I am like, the group is my primary partner. That group body is my primary partner. And that is what I am in devotion to and service of. And then everything else comes second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I'm really interested in is, like, you are working with a lot of really other big leaders. And I know this from my own experiences, like, there are power struggles, we compare each other. And for me, I really didn't feel any power struggles between me, you and Christian. And I was like, wow, that feels so clear between them two.
Yeah.
Like, is this easy for you, or how is it for you, or did you work for it to really stand in your own power between these other big leaders?
Yeah, for sure. I'm still working with it. You know, Christian and I have been working together for like 6 or 7 years. So we have a beautiful, like, we've been through so much together. We're also very good friends. We're like, connected. We're not just working together. We're also like relating it personally outside of the space. So this is already something different for us. And I think at the beginning, in a few of the first events, we did have a little bit of some struggles, and we were still learning each other's ways and learning the different, everyone has their own quirks around how they hold space, you know? And you kind of figure out what those quirks are. And then it's either like, oh, those, I can work with those quirks, or it's like, no, this is not going to work, you know? But there's still people, and I think I struggle more in the newness. Like if it's someone I haven't worked with before and I really maybe admire them or look up to them also or value their opinion about things, I can still kind of fall back. That's probably my worst aspect, is that I'll fall back and over give space and just make myself a little bit smaller in those situations, and then I'll like regret it after, of like, oh, I didn't really like stand in my power then. That kind of, that felt not so good. That's not how I want to be. But even that, like, there's been such a shift for me in the last, particularly the last year. So even that's, I'm kind of outgrowing even that at the moment, which feels really, really good. Yeah. Yeah. I more and more see how even the biggest, most amazing celebrity leaders are just human, you know, and then it makes it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know you that long, but when I read like older posts from you, I really can feel the shift somehow.
Yeah.
For me, I experienced you as so grounded, clear, and very soft at the same time. What happened in this shift? Like, I also feel such a devotion to life. The journey in the last years you did.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's a few things. Like first, I think for the first 8 or 9 years, I was working with my partner. So I had a romantic partner, and we were also business partners, and we ran Embodied Intimacy together. And we almost didn't really work with that many other people. Like we definitely never not worked together. And every once in a while, someone would come work with us. But I would say there was a way that we were like really one organism, he and I, we really like held the business and held this passion project and created it together in every sense of the word. And so when we transitioned out of working together and being romantic partners, that was a really big wobble for me. I had to find new parts of myself that I had. You know, it's like any relationship. You become, you know, if it's good, you become one. You know, that person does that thing, this person does this thing. There's a way that we balance the flow together. And so when he was gone, it left this huge space that I had to fill for myself. And so that really required I step into something that I hadn't been before. And simultaneously in that transition, I also became a mother. And that is like the other big, you know, there was nothing that really, like, I would say, like, pulled me into like extreme leadership and adulthood than being a mother. It's like, that is life's ultimate test. So both of those things colliding and those few years of overlap really shifted me, I think, in this way. And then I even had another relationship that ended a little bit over a year ago with the father of my daughter. And that also, and then me just really coming into my own space for the first time almost ever. Like right now, who I am as a facilitator is the first time I facilitate not in a partnership, just as a single woman. And that also requires a different part of me, a different belief in myself. I have to really believe in myself. And I think it's a good journey for me. I think it's from what I can tell, it's good. The impact it's had on me is a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really because you also wrote in your newsletter about being single for such a long time the first time. Yeah. And also how you and Christian talked or showed up in the space. It empowered me so much as a leader to kind of talk about being a single as well. I had such a hard belief system in me, like I only can be a good a good leader, especially when I also go in issues of connection and healing, if I have a partner, it freed so much, or it opened so much to experience you dealing with that. So thank you so much for this. And this also how then I also it reminds me how it works, how we inspire ourselves, and that everything can change there. And this is really a thing which I admire so much about you, how you show up out in the world, even when you say now you are an introvert. I mean, even more. I mean, you show up so sexy yesterday with this lapping pose. And also so deep, and as a space holder, as a woman, as a mother, with all your aspects. From where are you taking this bravery to step out there?
I mean, yeah, I think there's, there's a, for me, there is such a freedom in being fully seen and revealed, especially in the scary parts or in the controversial or the shameful parts. It's like the more known I am there, the more I liberate myself. And that's just been a journey over the last 15 years of making myself more public and kind of stepping into, the spotlight, or just even just stepping up and receiving what comes and realizing, wow, even when it's super freaking hard and I'm like really wanting to hide what I get, like the impact of how people receive me in that has really, I mean, if it wasn't for people's impact, if it wasn't for how I touch people or how people are touched by me, and then they share that with me, I would have stopped doing this a long time ago. Like it's very relational for me, this process. And I think that's where the courage comes from. The courage comes from feeling the impact that I am able to have and how I'm able to inspire other people. And simultaneously, how I'm freeing myself, from my own insecurities and judgments and shame and embarrassment and, et cetera, all of that dark, icky stuff. The more I just lean in, yeah, the more free I am, the more parts of me I get to be. And it's like, and it's a funny thing because it's like, as soon as I claim some part of me, then all of a sudden I'm not that anymore. And I am at the same time. It's a really interesting process, but I feel like I just keep growing and finding more aspects and becoming more whole, and at the same time becoming nothing. Because I can identify myself as all of it,
Yeah, I love the picture of doing, yeah, of this relating aspect and seeing also marketing as relating. So also, I mean, you're giving you brought the field training into the world where people are educated as space holders. Or what is your vision of the field training?
So, over the years, in my time as a facilitator with, my primary mode or medium of facilitation was with this business called Embodied Intimacy. And there we're really working with embodiment, relationship, intimacy, group work. And over the years of that facilitating, I started out like all facilitators do, like, oh, we're going to have this workshop. Here's what we're going to start with. Then we're going to do this. Then we're going to do this. And oh, it's a perfect thing. And I had my structures and my plans. And more as we were listening to the bodies, feeling the group, being in the space, it was like it started to feel almost violent to stay with the plan. And to have a structure. It felt like we were imposing something on people. And something really shifted as the focus went more into listening and responding rather than trying to do something to people, you know? And that's basically the shift that I'm trying to support facilitators and leaders to make. Like, how can your leadership come from a wisdom that's being sourced from the mystery or the emptiness or the space rather than your agenda for what you think or imagine would be, you know, what happens here? And so this is what I call field facilitation. Field facilitation is where we're listening and receiving and in this kind of feminine approach, just as much as we are penetrating and being structured in a more masculine approach, because that's usually the form of leadership today is like we've all been indoctrinated into this very masculine, very efficient, very productive, very linear world. And I'm trying to reset leadership and facilitation to also not just be, but also be feminine and to mix those two so that we know when, like when is the structure needed? And then when can we let go of structure and be in emergence and flow? And then when is more containment needed again? And in this, we find, I feel, a more holistic path to group work that is like it is the in-breath and the out-breath instead of just, you know. And so this is what we're trying to teach and to give people not only because the funny thing and the very controversial and very challenging thing about field facilitation is that it can't be taught without also experiencing and feeling. And it is almost more that you have to really experience it and be in it and feel it, because it's not about the what, it's about the how. So people come and they're like, okay, where's the like step-by-step plan? How do I, and it's like, if you're looking at field facilitation for the step-by-step plan, you're already doing it wrong. You know, there is no step-by-step plan. That's the whole point. And yet there are like keys and ingredients. And once you've doing this enough times, there is some ways to be, and yet you can't learn that way, because you'd be bypassing years of embodied knowing that has to come through really living it. So that's a little bit about the field, how it came to be, and what I'm hoping to gift people, and the difference that it has on the spaces is that people, you know, one of the really beautiful compliments I get is people are like, wow, like the whole time you were facilitating, I really felt you were feeling like I mattered. Mm-hmm. And like, I felt you listening and responding to what I was with. And I felt you, like you kept putting the next session was like, it couldn't have been more perfect for me. And I felt safe and I could relax and open more because I could see that you're constantly tracking and responding to what's happening in the group. That's what participants should be feeling in spaces. They should be feeling safer, more able to open and surrender and relax because they feel how deeply attuned the facilitator is, rather than you're just doing your agenda and I don't really matter. I'm just some, you know, I'm just some person here that can take it or leave it. You're just going to do the same thing anyway. So that really also kind of nails down why I keep doing this and why I believe in it so much.
Mm-hmm. There was just a lot of wind is going on here. I was like, oh God, yeah. What's happening in my flat? Wow. I love the passion you're talking about this training. And I mean, I experienced it by myself and I also felt so extremely safe and I could open so much in myself during this, through the space you created. And how can you halt this even when there is a lot going on in your life? I mean, you're a mother with kids. There is always going on a lot. Like, how can you kind of step back privately and halt this space is still so clear and with so much love and attunement.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit like, how can I not? But, you know, I think there's a training that we like. I think there's a disposition. There's like an innate capacity that some people have to do this and some people don't. So I also feel just a little bit like I've really, if I can congratulate myself for anything, is that I've really listened to my soul's calling and I've really followed it. And I, for whatever reason, have been able to not care about the world and culture and mainstream and projections enough to let it really hold me back from going, you know what, I'm going to go for it. But, you know, my mom for a long time was always like, I don't know if this is a good path. And I think maybe you should go back to college and get your degree as a therapist. And I think you should choose, like, she really wanted me to do what I was doing, but go the safe, acceptable version. And now she doesn't say this to me anymore. It's great. We've like turned a new corner where she gets like, hey, I'm gonna make this work. I'm gonna do this. This is where I'm going and I'm trusting it. So it's like this. Sorry, I kind of lost myself with that example. But yeah, there is this capacity that gets trained over time. And there is, I think, if I have a gift, and of course, in every gift, there's a shadow. And so I'm really aware of that. So I have a gift holding space where I can put my personal stuff aside. Where even when and if there's big things moving in my life and heart, I mean, when I went through some of my challenging breakups, I just throw myself into work and I'm just like, okay, I need to go be a purpose. And there's a wisdom in that. It's like when you're struggling, do seva, you know, show up, support, work, put your energy towards what matters. And there's a fine line between like, you know, not letting myself feel or avoiding or, you know, numbing out or pushing down. So there's like, I have to do a balance of, you know, really taking care of myself when I'm not in spaces and having my therapist and my self-care routines and doing all my things. And then when I am in space, then I can really just fully show up and be there and just put it to the side. And there are different parts of me that I access. There's just, and now it's like with any practice that you do for a long time, you know, at the beginning, when you start meditating, you really have to work to get in the zone of meditation. You really have to, okay, now I do this, and what's the next step, and how do I bring myself here? And then at a certain point, after however many years, you just sit down and it's like you can drop in a little bit more to that space. And this is the same for me with facilitation. It's like, I think I've done it enough now. It's like, okay, now I'm facilitating, now I'm holding space and I'm just showing up there. And I don't have to work so hard for that. It just is a it's like a button. It just, you know, it turns on, I light up and we're in the zone.
Great, yeah, I love the devotion to your what you talked about, your soul voice. And how did like becoming a mother change your space holding and also your sense of intimacy?
Yeah, being a mother changed a lot. I mean, one of the beautiful ones that I love to share with people. I was such a caretaker before becoming a mother, which is like, you know, the shadow would be like trying to rescue everyone and overgiving and healing and blah, blah, blah. I was really good at this and really, yeah, making it happen out of this. And as soon as I became a mother, this just like stopped. I was like, I can't take care of you anymore. You got to do that yourself. Like, I am not available anymore to be your mom, to be your caretaker, to be the one who's gonna. I just like it just forced me to take a huge step back into myself because I like met my own edge of capacity. Like, as you know, when the for the first 2 years of my daughter's life, she was breastfeeding. So I still kept holding space. Every space I held, my daughter was there. I'd be in session, I'd get out of session to breastfeed, be with my daughter in the breaks and in the evening, and then go back into session. I was never not space holding for 2 years. I was always a mother or a space holder, period. There was no me time ever. So that was really intense. And it was like that. It was like, okay, I just literally can't do this anymore. You have to, and I had to hand it back. And that just, it was like a shift that stuck. I never went back after that. And I still don't go back after that. It also changes the way I relate. I'm like not open to caretaking anymore in my relationships. It's like, no, I have a child. You can't be my child. I'm sorry. Like you can't, it's just not even possible. I will like crumble. So this is one of the really beautiful, really beautiful. And I tell that to people who are caretakers. I'm like, just have a kid. just have a kid. It'll end it for you. You won't be able to do it anymore. It forces you out of it. But it's also like, it's really in the really beautiful way is she's also helped land all of the practices and teachings, and everything that I do is just landing and reconfirmed and reaffirmed by my experience of watching her grow and seeing who she becomes and seeing the impact these practices have on her, or seeing when I don't do them and the impact that has on her. It's just, it's all landing and deepening through her reflection. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, there are not so many mothers in this field of like international space holders in the intimacy field and tantra field. And for me, I really felt that I trust you more because you are a mother even before I met you in the retreat. And I think it's very inspiring also for other women because there is still this deep belief of we have to decide.
Yeah.
You live your purpose or you are a mother.
Yeah.
Somehow you combine this.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. It's kind of not a possibility for me the other way. You know, my purpose was never to be a mother. I'm really clear of that. Even if it sounds a little bit harsh, it was never my purpose in this life to have children. I at least I think that now that I have one, it's probably debatable. But I really, my purpose is really important to me. You know, I could not be a stay-at-home housewife. This, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's a part of me that wishes that I could actually, but it's just not who I'm here to be. So it was a little bit like that. If I was going to do it, it could only work in the way that my purpose stays intact. And now what's beautiful is that, you know, she is my purpose, you know, and she is also part of that becoming in me. It's not like she's something separate. It's all intertwined now. And I get to be a mother and a space holder, and they get to really support one another as well and feed off of one another. I'm a better mother because I'm a space holder, and I'm a better space holder because I'm a mother. And I think there is something you're saying. You know, I was at an event that I was facilitating, and I had a team, and I was really struggling with my team. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, and then I looked at the team and I was like, oh, I get it. None of you are parents. None of you have ever had someone else that was more important than your own self. Like, you're all a little bit self-absorbed in that, just like any child-free person is. It's like you wake up, you do your morning practice, your whole life is your own. And becoming a parent is like, you get that those days are over. There's someone else who will always be more important than you, that you have to show up for, that you have to serve beyond your own desires and needs and fantasies. And that really makes people different. It really, really does. And I get why it's really not conducive to parenting to hold space like this. Many space holders are child-free because they can travel the world and go wherever and have all this time and do their spiritual practice. And yeah, it's not easy to do both. But I like what you're saying. I think there is a need for that grounded leadership that arrives in someone when they also have the experience of being a parent.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
So if there are If mothers are listening, for sure there will mothers listening, and also other women or men who really are longing to live their purpose, but there's this big fear, and there's this big fear of being seen, of being witnessed, of stepping out there. What would you tell them?
I would say, what is the smallest step you can take and to take it? It's not like go for the big thing. I believe very much in titration and building on successes. And so it's like, what is the smallest step you can take that feels like a win, whether it's like making a post on social media or gathering some friends at your house and offering to do your favorite practice with them, or applying to teach something at a festival. I don't know, whatever that might even be pretty big, but whatever that small step is, just to take a small step and then to feel the impact of that and to not like. I think what happens for people is they maybe try to overextend and like, oh, now I have to go for it. And then they might get burned. And then it's really hard to come back because now you also have to repair the nervous system from the burn. So it's like, what is the most integratable, safe step you can take? And take that and then keep taking those steps, small though, and then come back and like regulate, resource, and integrate, and then take another small step. And I think in that pendulation, in that titrated step taking, you're also able to listen more. And I think that's another thing that I've kind of been doing all these years is like I take a little step and I see where the energy responds to me and where it's going. And then I take another step in that direction. And you can find guidance in a different way than when you're taking small, integratable steps. So. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, all my body gets so relaxed
It can be easy. Find how it's easy and let it be easy.
Yeah. And it also reminds me, you write a lot about intimacy. It kind of reminds me also on that.
It's a very intimate process. It's intimate with your, I mean, intimacy arrives and starts with ourselves. So it's like, how do I stay closely, intimately connected to myself? And I find this happens most often when we're not going so fast and so big, but actually staying more tenderly connected inside and letting that slow blossoming arrive and arise from within. Then we can be that transmission of intimacy up with ourselves, which then invites other people to meet us there.
Yeah, it's kind of the same like with really intimate encounters with people. Like often it's or as a trauma response, it's often so fast. We are kind of naked on all the levels, but then it's too fast. And it's also good to take time there. I really learned this during the last years. And I really love it how you write about your own experiences right now. So just for everyone to follow you and follow your journey. It's really, really lovely.
Thank you so much.
So we are almost at the end, and I have a question I'm asking everyone who's coming. What is the bravest thing you've ever done in your life?
The bravest thing I've ever done in my life. I mean, there's so many ways to respond to this. I mean, there's so many things that are coming all simultaneously. I don't know if there's one, there's one element of following the path of polyamory and dating and relating with more than one person is a very brave for me. Still very brave. Another of, trying to start a community and buy land and failing with that. That was also a very brave moment for me. And then I think I attempted a home birth with my daughter. My plan was to have natural home birth at home, which also was not successful. And that also felt really brave. You know, that might be personally the one that was the most brave, just because it had to do in a very physical way with my own body. And the other are like more brave in different ways. Polyamory, attempting to start a residential community, and natural home birth. Those would be the three.
Great. Wow. Also, yeah, again, like I just get the devotion aspect again.
Yeah, I'm very devoted to this path.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. Thank you so much. So where can people find you and your devotion and clarity?
Well, I have a very alive Facebook page. That's kind of, I don't know, however I found my spark. So at Rachel Rickards. And then Linktree. I have a Linktree page where you can find all of my events, and that's where they're kind of posted and updated. And then I've started a Substack so that people who just want to see my writings have one place where they can find all of my writings that are current. And I've been going back and archiving all of my old writings. So it's taking me a little bit of time. I think I'm up to like 2021 right now, but I will get them new. And then, my website personally is rachelrickards.com. And then there's the field, which is the-field.com for people who want to know about the field facilitator training.
Great. Yeah, I will put that all in the show notes so it's easy for the people to find.
Thank you so
wow,
much.
Wow, I have so many more questions.
Yeah, to be continued.
But I think it's fine for now.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your presence. And you also have your podcast, of course. So.
Oh, yeah. And I have my own podcast. Yeah. In presence, we trust.
Yeah. So people can also find that. Thank you so much for your energy and your love and your devotion and inspiration. And I really can feel that you also bring so many new sparkles of being a woman, a mother, a leader in this time. And this, just thank you for that you do that. Go follow your path.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for seeing me.
So then you find everything you want to find about Rachel. Check it out. Follow the call into her spaces. And thank you so much for being here. Okay, so bye to everyone and see you next time. So where is my